The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, it's a tribute to Jim the Anvil Neidhart. From Natty Neidhart, Jim's daughter, and her husband, his son-in-law, Tyson Kidd, a.k.a. TJ Wilson. They're back on the show to talk all about the late, great Anvil. Jim's last big in-depth interview before his passing was right here on Talk is Jericho. I just put that up again as a rerun, I guess you'd say, a re-airing. Check it out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the Westwood One app if you haven't heard it yet. Jim talked a lot about his time in wrestling, told some great stories about being a part of the legendary Hart Foundation tag team, and now Natty and TJ are sharing some of their favorite stories about the Anvil, stuff from Natty's childhood and what it was like growing up around the business and with her dad constantly on the road, stories from Jim's last few years he didn't like that Luke Gallows, and what he enjoyed about today's WWE and even shooting the Total Divas TV show. It's a great tribute to the Anvil, and thanks to Natty and TJ for once again having me into their home to remember him. That's coming up right away. First, also coming up, it's the Judas Rising Tour closing in to the last few shows. We're in Charlotte, North Carolina tonight at the Underground. That's going to be a huge show. Jacksonville, North Carolina got moved due to Hurricane Florence, that poopy hurricane. We are now going to be in Johnson City, Tennessee at Capone's. They were able to get us into the venue with only a few days' notice. So if you're in the Tennessee area, Johnson City, Knoxville, Morristown, my old stomping grounds, come hang out with us at Johnson City, Tennessee at Capone's. That's on the 20th. That's on Thursday. Then the 25th is the Blind Tiger in Greensboro, North Carolina. 26th, Mavericks Live on the beach in Jacksonville, Florida. Great beach town there. 27th, House of Blues in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. That's pretty much Orlando. 28th is the Orpheum in Tampa, Florida, and the 29th is the Culture Room in Fort Lauderdale. Come check us out with Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir. And then, of course, on October 6th, we are playing the Rock Allegiance Show main stage in Camden, New Jersey. Then we're heading over to Australia and New Zealand on the 7th. We're in Auckland at the studio. The 9th, which is my birthday, we're in Max Watts in Melbourne. Sydney on the 10th at the Manning Bar. 13th, Adelaide at the Gov. 14th in Brisbane at the Triffid. And then we're hooking up with 3 Days Grace for 4 dates on their Canadian tour. Moncton on the 21st. Halifax on the 23rd. Quebec City on the 24th. The 25th is Montreal. And then we continue on throughout Canada as we hit, where else are we going? We're going everywhere, man. We're going to the St. John in Arnprior, Ontario. Actually, the John Street. There you go. 27th or the London Music Hall in London, Ontario. 28th is the Rock Pile in Toronto. 30th is at Crocs in Thunder Bay. December 1st, Burton Cummings Theater in Winnipeg. That's a hometown show. The 2nd is the Exchange in Regina. The 3rd, the Starlight Room in Edmonton, Alberta. And then at the Gateway in Calgary on December 4th, it is the official last show of the Judas Rising Tour. And then we go back in the studio and start working on some new stuff. So go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information. And also all Fozzy VIP information. It's one of our legendary meet and greets, one of the best in the business. We do a mini concert for you. We take pictures, we sign stuff, we hang out, we chat with you. It's one of the best experiences you could have at a rock and roll show. FozzyRock.com for all VIP info, all ticket info, and for all info on the late, great Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Let's talk to Natty and her husband, Tyson Kidd, right here on Talk is Jericho. It's the elegy to the Anvil right now.
We just get right into it. There's no introduction here. There's no rules on Talk is Jericho. And we're here at TJ and Natty's house. And the last time we were here was for Jim the Anvil Neidhart's, possibly his last ever interview or one of his last interviews.
Yeah, definitely his last like sit down to that length. I know like he had done a couple signings, so maybe like a couple five minute like Bill Apter or something.
Gotcha.
But in terms of sit down like that, yeah, definitely the last one.
Yeah, and we're here. Jim passed away a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to just have a conversation with you guys and just kind of remember the life and times of a very unique and quirky guy. As a matter of fact, when he passed away, I text Brett and I said, "Hey man, sorry to hear the news." I said, "You know, Anvil was one in a million," and Brett sent back 1 in 10 million. you know, a guy that you don't really come across a guy like that too often.
No, my dad was really unique. It's funny because, like, I was, you know, telling you about how I was looking back on pictures of my dad, and, like, my dad was just so cool. And I said that at the service, and it was so nice to have you at the service. Like, you're kind of an extended part of the Hart family.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a compliment for you.
Yeah.
Or, like, but
how could it not be?
There's a few people that are just quirky and original enough that they could hang with family and not want to.
You know what's interesting, just talking with Jim on the podcast, and Jim, we'll discuss, he had some we mentioned he had some Alzheimer's at that point in time. Did you notice he was including me with him? Like,
you and me
were there. And like, I think he was kind of confusing that I was actually in the WWF in the 80s with him.
Funny enough, and maybe this story's better a little bit later, but one time I'm here watching Raw, and it was a Luke Gallows match, and Jim's expression just totally changed, and he's like, "This guy? Oh, he's horrible. I hate this guy." And I thought, so there were a few years where Luke Gallows was released, and he was like this little, like, kind of king of the indies type thing. Luke would go get a booking in South Africa and kind of be the booker there.
Right.
He booked Goldberg over there. Luke was like in charge. Gallows was in charge.
Yeah, he's a hustler, man.
Yeah. So I thought, oh man, damn, Gallows and Jim had a bad
experience.
Somehow
we thought.
And I figured, like, no way, Gallows would love Jim more than anybody.
Of course, the ultimate brother, yeah.
Yeah. So then a little bit of time goes on as the match. He's like, oh, this guy. Oh, he's horrible. I beat the hell out of this guy before in a match. And I was like, there's a chance they wrestled, you know? So then it turns out, then a little bit is going on. And he's like, oh, I remember Dynamite ribbing the hell out of him. Then I knew he was confusing Gallows with somebody else. But the funny thing is, anytime I put on a Gallows match, same
thing.
Facial change. And one time Harry was kind of egging it on. He's like, hey, Jim, what do you think about this jabroni? He's like, oh, this guy's a jabroni. But then here's the compliment in the whole thing. He's watching it and he's like, we got a lot better since I wrestled him.
So who did he think it was?
I feel like I know my dad, I actually told Shane McMahon this story because I thought it was so funny. And Shane goes, do you think he thought that Gallows was Barry Darso?
No, he loved.
And I thought, well, my dad loved Barry Darso.
Demolition,
yeah. But it must have been somebody from my dad's past that he just didn't like, or that rubbed him the wrong way, or something. But
like some enhancement guy or somebody.
Buzzsaw.
And the best part
is Sawyer.
Gallows loves this story. Loves this story.
Just trying to think who he kind of resembles. You know?
I don't know. There was a guy in Calgary that was like an independent wrestler named Gary Gallant.
No,
I don't know. But anyway, it was just a funny story because my dad would get so worked up every time he saw Gallows. And I saw Gallows actually at SummerSlam. And I said to him, I go, my dad hated you.
And had no idea who you were.
And he goes, Natty, I love this story. He goes, I love that your dad hated me. And I go, but my dad just like, he didn't know, you know, I told him the whole thing. And it was just funny.
He knew about it. My first day back, I was telling him about it. And Kevin Dunn walked by. And Kevin was like, TJ, that's on you to get some footage, which, like, I was sitting in my hotel in I did a seminar in Texas, and I was like, man, because Jim was at our house Thursday and Friday, and I was like, man, when there was some downtime, I should have put on a Gallows match and recorded the reaction.
The classic TJ rip. But you were mentioning earlier, Natty, when you said that Kevin, when you were putting together the tribute video for Anvil, that he wanted you to send him the pictures.
He was super supportive about, like, the morning of finding out that news. You know, Kevin was awesome about just making sure that they just wanted to make sure that video package was perfect. And for me, you know what it's like to get that primetime TV time on Raw. For me, for the company, for WWE to put together such an incredible video package of my dad, it was almost 3 minutes long. And like, they were pictures that were personally coming from me, not just from their archive. Mm-hmm. They were like family photos, baby pictures. Like, I think it just was made my mom, my sisters and I feel so much better that my dad was going to get the spotlight. And it was just that to me, the company just, they just handled everything so perfectly. They were
when it comes to real life stuff, the company is honestly second to none.
But let me say this though, it's also interesting too, because listen, unfortunately, there's a lot of guys that pass away in the business. Jim, you know, you forget,
until somebody like Anvil passed away. I'm just looking on Instagram right here. I posted this picture that a dude I know did.
Oh, yeah.
76,000 likes on Instagram, which, you know, usually I'll get 15 or 20 or 25.
Right.
I got texts from people all around the world saying, oh, sorry about Anvil. I don't know how close you were. I can't believe Anvil died. For guys like coming up in the business and my generation, the Hart Foundation was freaking huge.
Yeah.
And Jim the Anvil Neidhart was a huge personality within that. I think we've forgotten now to a little bit 30 years later. Right. But when he passed away, a lot of people were like, holy shit, the Anvil, part of my... And so WWE treated Jim with the reverence and respect he deserved as a star within the company, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And I always believe, you know, everybody always says the Hart Foundation and Bulldogs and this person should be in the Hall of Fame and this, that. I just believe in my heart that the company has a strategy for everything. And I believe that, like, WWE...
It's also not a race.
It isn't a race.
The Hall of Fame doesn't... It's like your Hall of Fame coming up in New York isn't the last one.
That's right.
It's the time will come when it's the right time. And... For me, like last year, my dad came to, I really felt strongly about bringing my dad to WrestleMania last year. And we weren't going to do it. And then about a week before WrestleMania, I said to my mom, I'm going to get you guys tickets. You're going to come down. I want daddy there. And it was a very last minute decision to bring my dad to WrestleMania. And I'm glad I did because a lot of people got to see him and say hi to him and, you know, take pictures with him. And my dad felt really special and important. But it was also, I could also see that my dad, there were some times that he was struggling a little bit, like at the Hall of Fame ceremony, he couldn't stay for the whole, you know, he couldn't stay for the
super long line at the hotel. I mean, the line
was boarding the buses and my dad just wasn't, you know, he just, it was like overwhelming for him.
So because having the condition he had, would it make him get nervous or he couldn't be around people or was he starting to feel physically sick or what do you mean?
My dad was like, there was moments that he was super clear and then there was just moments that he was kind of quiet and like vacant.
Okay.
And then there was moments that he was great and nobody would know that there was anything wrong. And then there was moments again that he was like, he would just kind of need some space. Mm-hmm. Need to
yeah,
go home.
I think being around a lot of people.
Yeah, WrestleMania is tough for us. You know,
yeah. And never mind. We really created like a fortress around my dad, my mom, and my sisters, TJ. You know, like I was super protective of my dad, and I still am super protective of him. That's why I told you, I was like, my dad's not doing any other interviews. He's only going to do your podcast because I know you'll do him justice. Mm-hmm. I know he'll feel comfortable and safe, and I feel safe having you do it. Mm-hmm. And that was the last interview my dad ever did. And
we had to do some edits because he repeated some of his stories and stuff. But when you listen to that show, it's a great show. He did a great job.
No, his long-term memory was insane. Like even that last Thursday and Friday when he came here with his sister and we were watching old family videos and old family photos. And he would remember, like, Ellie would say, oh, is that this cat? And he's like, no, it's this one. And then his sister was like, yeah, you're right. And his long-term memory was, that's why telling those stories, WrestleMania 2.
Gotcha.
And Andre, and he would recite those perfectly every time.
He can remember all that sort of stuff.
Maybe yesterday he might not remember what we did.
But also, go ahead.
No, it's just what with my dad, this isn't just recently, but my whole entire life, my dad was just such a unique person. With my dad, we always took everything one day at a time because he was so... He kind of was larger than life at times.
Well, he was an ultimate brother. You're talking about a guy from the 80s. And then we mentioned those guys traveling 350 days a year or whatever it was. And that's not a joke.
Yeah.
You know it because you were a little bit. What do you remember about that? Like, do you remember him being gone long periods of time and being home only for a couple days? Like,
yeah, I just remember my dad growing up in the 80s in the heyday of the, you know, I'm trying to think of the...
Like the WWF kind of first boom.
The boom of that, even just tag team wrestling with the Bulldogs and the Killer Bees and the, you know...
Demolition.
And, I just remember my dad being gone a lot. And I talked with Tamina Serona Snuka. Tamina Snuka, her dad was Jimmy Snuka.
Jimmy Snuka, yeah.
And she said that, you know, her dad would be gone like 300 days a year. And my dad and Jimmy Snuka actually traveled together at times. And our dads were gone.
That must have been a hell of a car to be in.
Just a couple of gyms driving around.
Well, and my dad loved Jimmy Snuka. He really thought very...
You know, it's funny. I never heard him bash anybody.
My dad
That's
never...
a very funny thing about him. Like,
besides Luke Gallows.
The fake Gallows.
besides Luke Gallows, my dad was really... My dad was just like... He was just really cool. And that's what I'm going back to that because I keep looking at these pictures of my dad, and it's like he was dressing like Conor McGregor back in the 80s. He had this like weird shirt and sunglasses, and it was like a flowered shirt with these really tight jeans, and like they were, I'm like, whoa, my dad was like, he just was,
he wore the pink kind of the Bad News Alley used to wear like the kind of the African cap with no bill on it. I remember I saw that. I was like, I forgot he wore the pink leather like African hat.
And I don't even think it was a man's hat. I think it was a woman's.
He just found this hat.
I'd like to have known the story. Like, did he maybe get Brett one too? And Brett was thinking, no way in hell he's wearing it. There's
you can pull it off. I can't. Yeah.
Brett just has the best stories about my dad. But my dad was just so cool. And he just, growing up, like, it wasn't unusual for my dad to come to our PTA meetings with a fanny pack on, no t-shirt, wearing spandex. With my dad used to wear these
no shirt,
knee sleeves. Like, if knee sleeves, the whole time ankles. I've known him,
like leg warmers,
like leg warmers, but like that you'd wear underneath your knee pad.
Oh, gotcha. Like the neoprenes.
Yes.
Gotcha.
He'd wear them around his ankles. So he had like his, it was almost like he had a little boot on with his sneaker. He'd wear Air Jordans or whatever the coolest tennis shoes were. He was a big shoe guy. And like Rolex watches, Tumi luggage.
So funny, like now you see
cashmere.
Guys at the gym all the time with like the shorts and the tight
spandex.
Underneath.
Yeah.
That was Jim's look. Always
do
that.
So he would go to your PTA. Do you recall him going and having a conversation with the teacher? Or did he ever have to go talk to a teacher because you got in trouble or something?
He came and gave a pair. We had a bring your dad to work day, and my dad. I'm not joking. My little sisters can attest to this. My dad came on his Ninja motorcycle, and he. My dad loved these like shirts, like they were, I don't know if you remember them, No Fear. Mm-hmm. And some of them had like these really sort of derogatory messages, like no fat chicks allowed or like.
That's right.
And like some of them were just like weird.
So but, 80s, right?
Yeah. So 80s. I don't even know where he got them, but it was just funny because my dad would show up, he'd be wearing the knee pads on his ankles, the fancy tennis, the fancy like pumps, Reebok pumps or the Jordans or he just had these cool shoes on. I can't remember what the coolest shoe was in the 80s, but something. And came with like no shirt on, fanny pack, Ninja motorcycle. And then I think my mom made him put a shirt on, but he talked to the kids. It was like Miss Moore was my teacher. And he came and talked to the kids about how it's so important for them to excel in sports, and that for him it wasn't even about academics. It was about, and he was just, because my dad had a full scholarship to any university in the U.S. that he wanted, anywhere in the world.
For football?
For
shot putting.
When my dad was 18 years old, the LA Times, actually, when my dad passed away, they posted an article. And my dad, I'm so happy we're talking about this. This is really therapeutic for me. So I appreciate you guys letting me talk about it. My whole life, my dad would talk about this track meet, and it was like, he'd always talk about this guy and this track meet and this guy that he had to beat. And it was like, oh, come on, daddy, please. It's like the fucking, like, you know, my dad would just talk about this track meet. And it was like, I almost thought my dad was making this up, because I was like, come on. Like, my dad's like, if I beat Dubois, I was going to be the best in the world when I was 18. And surely enough, when my dad passed away, LA Times tweeted me the article. I'll show it to you. Mm. They tweeted me the article and a picture, and they said this meet, my dad did a whole interview with them, and it said this was the meet that if my dad, at this time, my dad was second in the nation for a shot put, and that his, like, if he beat this guy, named, I think it was John Dupree.
Pretty sure Dubois.
Dubois. Anyway, if he beat Dubois, I was like, oh my God, my dad talked about Dubois my whole life.
It was real.
Like, yeah. And I was like, this is the article. This is the meat. This is what my dad was talking about. I never, I was just thinking he was BSing me. Like,
which is so funny, because it's not like it's like the Al Bundy poke eye thing. It's not like, it's not like then he didn't do anything athletically the rest of his life. Oh, he should have seen this one time 40 years ago. He went on to excel in all types of athletics, but
at this point, 1973, at this time, my dad was, before he had this meet, he was the second best shot putter in the nation. So because of his shot putting, he could go to any university in the U.S. that he wanted to, but my dad was a Cali boy, and he just, there, I guess at the time, UCLA was the place to be for track, and that was where Bruce Jenner went for track and field. And my dad would always talk about Bruce Jenner for his decathlon or triathlon. He would borrow my dad.
Decathlon, I think, maybe. Yeah.
Bruce Jenner would borrow my dad's shot put.
Oh.
And my dad was just an elite athlete, but that article was like, oh my God, my dad wasn't just BSing. Like, not that I think he's a BSer, but like, second best in the nation? Come on. Like, And
it's cool when you get that. Like, my dad played hockey for 10 years in the NHL, and I'll get tweets from people finding articles or a picture of my mom and dad from 1967 in Los Angeles at a hotel near, next to the pool. Or it's cool that when you have a dad of a family that has some you know, some history, when you find this stuff,
it's so cool. And
the power of social media,
that's right. Yeah, that's the good side of it, right?
Good side.
And it's just, yeah, all these people have been sending pictures, and like, I just think my dad was just such an elite, unique, he was, my dad taught me more than any other person. And I know you're very, I think you have a lot of eccentricities, which I think are good. It's good for your kids and for people around the world to go, like, even just your last like gear or costume look that you had at in New Japan was just very unique. My dad has taught me my whole life to be unique. He's just, don't color inside the lines. Just be different, be stand out, be everybody. It's so important to be different. And I think that sometimes people are afraid to be different. My dad has taught me so much about being different, standing out, you know, just being like, Brett was more kind of, you look at the Heart Foundation, Brett was more civilized and normal, not normal, but he was more like of the heartthrob. And my dad was like, just crazy.
It was why it was such a great mix. He was like, he looked insane, and he was big, and he was barrel chested. And like I said, he had the gut that wasn't a gut. It was just a big man's stomach.
Power lifter.
But the goatee, and we talked about this when he was on the show, like in 1987, nobody had a goatee like that. Nowadays, every rock and roll band, everybody.
Yeah.
But nobody had that. It was the only guy you could say who has a flat top haircut and a long goatee wearing pink.
Yeah.
It stood out.
Just being different. Like, my dad just like loved being different. And we went, you know, our last family outing was the Smashing Pumpkins concert. And Billy just, anybody that knows Billy knows he just loves wrestling.
Yes.
And my dad, Billy was always so kind to my dad, made my dad feel really important and special. And my dad, I don't know if my dad ever really followed this. I mean, that's kind of wasn't my dad's generation of music, but because Billy was so nice to him, my dad came to the concert and he was just looking at all these costumes of Billy's, and he's like, he's a badass. And like, he's like, I like that. Like, Billy had a skirt on and like paint on his face. And my dad was like, that's so cool. Like, you see him playing the guitar? Like, he was just like, I remember that. And I said to Billy, I'm like, I'm not sure if my dad's going to be able to make it through the full concert, but Billy's like, well, just if he doesn't feel good, we'll have him come backstage. My dad was rocking out at that concert. And like, I was like, daddy's got more energy than me, my sisters, my mom. Like, you know, it's funny. I was telling you after, like, he came to life at like 11 o'clock at night. And he was like, that was great. You were on the air. Like, my point is that my dad was just really different, and he had that energy, and he just liked people that were different. He liked unusual, unique people. He just, that's who he was. And that's what I love, that message that I just, I love, like, that makes me want to be more like my dad when I think about just him being cool, you know?
Now, TJ, you basically grew up in the Hart family, but I want to talk about your relationship with Anvil, how that changed, if it did, when he became your father-in-law. But before we get to that, let's talk about another unique personality in wrestling, talking about WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page, the creator and founder of DDP Yoga. Now, listen, Dallas is so sure that this DDPY program is perfect for everybody that he's given you a chance to try it for free. That's right, for free, for days. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get started. Now, you've seen and heard what DDPY has done and is still doing for me. I mean, seriously, there'd probably be no New Japan gigs or Fozzy gigs if it weren't for DDPY helping me to stay at the top of my game. And DDPY has also helped superstars like Mick Foley. He lost over 100 pounds. Also wrote the foreword to Dallas's new book, which is cool. AJ Styles, Goldust, Edge, Jake the Snake Roberts, Scott Hall, Corey Taylor's into it. Rich Ward is into it. Just to name a few. Rich Ward does it outside the Fozzy Tour Bus every single day in the sun. And Dallas was also just at the WWE Performance Center taking the NXT crew through DDPY workouts, which I'm sure you've seen on social media. But if you're still not convinced about the power of DDPY, then check out Dallas's new real-life reality series, We Can Rebuild You. Dallas has been working with disabled vet Jerry Cameron, who wants to be able to walk again without using his walker. I can tell you he's nearly there because Dallas is on the case. Dallas already got Jerry doing the DDPY workouts without the walker. And you hear me say this all the time. DDP Yoga can help you no matter your age or skill level. And it's more than just yoga. It's a kick-ass cardio program that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core with low impact on your joints. And the DDP Yoga Now app makes it super easy to get in the path to healthy living and stay there. You can connect a Bluetooth heart rate monitor to the app, so all of your workout data and calories burned are logged into it. Dallas is also on the app to offer a little personal motivation on the days you need it most. Come on, bro. Take advantage of the free 7-day trial at ddpyoga.com/Jericho so you can see exactly what I'm talking about. It's free. That's right. Free. It means nothing. Free. So you got nothing to lose and everything to gain, and you can cancel at any time. But if you love it, like I know you will, Dallas is giving you 20% off an annual membership of the DDP Yoga Now app and 20% off all the DDP Yoga DVD packs. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho now. That's 20% off an annual membership and 20% off all the DVDs at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And if you're looking to meet Dallas in person, he's a trip. You're going to love him. I got a couple opportunities to tell you about where you can do that. DDP is doing live workshops in Toronto, Canada this Saturday, September 22nd, and at the Rhode Island Comic Con, November 2nd through the 4th. And of course, DDP will be doing live DDP yoga workshops on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea next month. I just talked to him about that today. This might be a little surprise for all the people that come on the cruise as well. So get on board the DDP yoga program. Start your free 7-day trial at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best mental and physical shape you've ever been in. Go do it now with DDP yoga. I highly recommend it.
The Team Tiger Awesome Show. Clint Gage, Nick Mundy, Michael Truly. The Team Tiger Awesome Show. It's a weekly take on current events in pop culture at large that quickly devolves into nonsensical tangents about why cop rock rules. That's not true. Dog police rules. That's stupid. How would a dog even hold a gun? Just don't correct me in front of the listeners. It's done. We're done. Just drop it. If you like your podcast to go all over the place like the copy I just read to you, The Team Tiger Awesome Show is for you. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Every Sunday on Westwood One.
DJ, you grew up kind of in the Hart family, in the Hart house, so you probably knew. It's not like you came home one day and you're dating Natty and you have to meet her dad, but how was that for you kind of becoming, you know, Anvil became your father-in-law? Did you know him your whole life? And how was he to you?
So I met him. I met him because they lived in Florida at the time, so they would come to Calgary once in a while. So I remember meeting him, actually. He came into town for a live event in Calgary, first time I met him. And I don't know, maybe 12 or something. And I just remember, and I was such a small kid anyway. I just remember thinking, how huge is this guy?
Yeah.
This guy's giant. And then all of a sudden you hear him speak. He's very soft-spoken and very, like...
very eloquent, though.
Yeah.
I want to
talk
to you about that, Natty, because he spoke very intelligently, which, once again, you wouldn't expect from such a big, crazy-looking guy.
So then fast forward, I don't... for whatever reason, we always got along. When he had a job in... just even before Natty and I were together, but in 2000, he was actually telling me about Brian Kendrick and Daniel Bryan, because he was in Memphis. Jim had a job as a talent
scout in
Memphis. And so he's like, he came to a Stampede show and he's like, oh, you'd be great. And he took a bunch of pictures of me, wrote a bio, which is very funny. Like,
he wrote it for you?
Yeah, very funny to think about. he took pictures of Ted and I, and he's like, oh, this is perfect. They're looking for young guys. Oh, and you just, so like, I don't know. We got along ever since. And we never, ever, ever had any kind of issue.
Never.
Ever.
I don't even think my dad, like, he never really acknowledged that we were a couple, even to the end. Like, it was like, TJ was like,
he'd always, and he, like, just like Natty said.
I think if he knew that we were together, he might not like you.
What, you're married? What are you talking about?
I thought you guys just split the bills.
I always just like had that vision of, like, because my dad would never, like, he just.
Because you guys have been dating since you were teenagers?
I think TJ knows the exact date.
Natty is 19, I'm 21 at the time.
Okay, so it was very early on, yeah.
Yeah.
And so one day the kid that's always hanging out is now dating my daughter.
Well, it's everything's so unorthodox and unconventional about our relationship. We are already living together as friends in the guest house at Stu's. So like,
and we.
So I'm sure everybody already thought we were together, but we
really
were.
Right.
So
yeah, we were really. Well, you were really annoying for a long time, about 4 years. It was because you and Ted were really close, Teddy Hart. And so I always thought Ted would get on my nerves because he's always trying to act cool. And
so you're guilty by association because
so
of Teddy.
But and Ted were like two peas in a pot,
being friends with Ted was funny because it was guilty by association. But then also, over time, it was easy to look like the easygoing person compared to him.
So yeah,
so you had to get past that first stage. But then after that, it's like, he's pretty good. He's not quite as bad as him.
It's like a chubby guy hanging out with a chubbier guy. You look thin in comparison. But let's talk about the eloquence. And you mentioned about Kevin Dunn talking about when he saw Jim's like baby pictures, like, oh my gosh, he was so classy as a child.
Right.
Talk a little bit about his family upbringing.
Yeah, no, my dad was just really, he was from a very affluent family, and his dad was an attorney, and his grandfather was a district attorney, and his mom was, you know, just this beautiful, almost like, I'll have to show you a picture of her, but she just looked like a Hollywood starlet. Mm. And his sister was just I'm just trying to think. Debbie is, she does something with the courts in California, but they're like very well educated, very classy kids. And my great-grandfather, my dad's grandfather, who my dad idolized, called him Poppy. You always heard my mom and dad talk about. He owned a hotel called The Lamplighter in Disneyland. Hmm. And so my dad...
Yeah, across the street, right?
Wow. It was like... And back then, to think of owning a hotel, Disney was like crazy. And so the Lamplighter would host all of these starlets, like Rita Hayworth and Clark Gable would play on the piano there. My dad and mom in their living room have that piano that Rita Hayworth and Clark Gable would play on.
Wow.
And my dad, like, that piano was so special to my mom. They have it still
it's
in their house.
Through
every high and low of my mom and dad's life, that piano was like front and center because it was like Rita Hayworth played on that piano.
Damn it.
But it's just such a special, like, my dad just came from a very...
That would explain his speech.
Well educated, you know. Again, went to UCLA, had a full scholarship there. His mom and dad were very, you know. My dad came from a very wealthy background, and it's funny because that's the opposite of what my mom came from. Because the Harts, it was always sort of feast or famine. If
Stampede, business was good,
if Stampede Wrestling was, you know, if things were great, they were on top. If business wasn't good, they were barely able to eat.
Yeah, Brett's wearing Wayne's old jeans or whatever the hell it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And so my dad was from the opposite of that. So he was kind of spoiled and kind of never wanted for anything. But I think growing up for my dad, one of the hardest things in his childhood was my grandparents, when they split up. Mm. My dad went to live with his dad, and my Aunt Debbie, who's my dad's only sibling, she went to live with her mom. Oh, so it was like in their teens, and it was really hard because they were so close. But, you know, it was like, I don't know who made the decision, but it was like, okay, Jim's going to live with Hank and Debbie's going to live with Katie. And it was like, I think that was really hard for my dad because his kind of world was being ripped apart. So that was a traumatic thing for my dad and his life. And I think I sometimes think he never really got over his parents' divorce because they were such a close, secure, tight-knit little family. So as we got older, my mom and dad, you know, like through thick and thin, they were always together. They always worked everything out. My mom, I said this at the funeral service, my mom, from how wild my dad was, she deserved a Nobel Peace Prize.
No kidding. So they never split up?
Never.
Wow.
Like they would have, you know, my mom and dad, they had I feel like it's safe to say that they had their ups and downs,
of course.
But they never, you know, they never got a divorce. They never had a breakup that lasted longer than 24 hours.
Hmm.
It just was like, my mom would get mad and my dad would be like, you know,
his anvil was wild.
My dad was wild. And
I mean, they just by proxy, the majority of those guys in the 80s, just by their schedule and what they were going through and like all the, I mean, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
Everybody was
wild.
Doing drugs and steroids or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But Anvil was one of the guys that was wilder than wild.
Yeah.
Your mom to put up with
that's
that.
That's what I say. About, like, his genetics must be just be so insane.
Well, completely, right?
Right. Like, because he's around from those times, and he's like, here he is a few weeks ago, he's still strong as hell.
Yeah, my dad was just, like I said, I know I keep going back to it, but he was just so cool and so different. Like, even up until the end, like, he loved those Roots of Fight shirts, and every single time I would
Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson, every picture that you post, he's wearing one of
those.
Well,
the people at Roots of Fight, they're so sweet. They always send me boxes of stuff for my dad. So I had this little box that was stashed away. I still have it. And
so it's like every time he comes over, he gets like a new shirt.
I loved because my dad's like a big kid. He was like a big kid, and
gifts.
he loves gifts and loves little presents and stuff. And I always had this little stash of things I'd collect, like from work. I would get like Big Show shirt or Mark Henry or John Cena. I would have all these shirts for him, and I'd be like, oh, my dad would love that. And like, because I would love to give him little gifts when he came over. So he would just get really excited. He'd almost like rip the bag open with his teeth. And so I still have this box. So every time my dad came over, he would like march in the house like Porky Pig, as Brett had called him. And he still wore his fanny pack. And I'd go, Daddy, I got a present for you. And he's like, present for me? Like, and he'd open up his shirts. Oh, I love this. And sometimes the shirts didn't fit him, but he didn't care.
He wore them anyways. It's funny. We talked about the fanny pack on the show. And 2 years ago when we taped that, now fanny packs are popular again.
Yeah.
He probably could find a better one now. He said at the time he couldn't find one anywhere.
Yeah. Rhonda came to the locker room with an Alexander Wang fanny pack.
That's the new thing now. I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. Of all the fashion, that's what's coming back now. A little
bit. And maybe in a couple more years, Hayes will be right on the
right on the cusp. Probably never, but maybe. Did you ever work with Anvil at all, TJ, when he was doing Independence, or you were doing Independence?
No. Ted did and Harry as well, but I never did any kind of... Natty team with them a couple times, actually.
Did you? Well, I saw there's one that you guys were doing Heart Foundation clothesline.
You guys did a tag match in Edmonton.
What was that finish called? The Heart Foundation.
Heart Attack, right.
We did. I'm just trying to. Right before I got signed, we had done like two tag matches together. And my dad, I didn't want him wearing his gear because I was like, no, you're not wearing your old gear. You're not wearing gear from 1980. Like, I was very, like I said, I was very protective of my dad. I wanted to make sure he was on looking great. So he had these motorcycle boots and these cool like motocross pants that he was wearing. And we did the Heart Attack together. And so my dad's role always for the Heart Attack was to hold the guy like in a bear hug. And Brett's job was to hit the ropes and clothesline the guy. And so my dad was playing the role of himself and I was being Brett. And so he just is so funny. Cause like, my dad said the guy dug his heels into my dad's shins. And my dad was so mad after that. He's like, he just dug his heels into my shins. And like, my dad wanted to kill the guy. And I was like, well, don't worry, Daddy. I took care of it with a clothesline. The poor guy. I mean,
you
I was.
You guys had another one too with Victor.
Yeah, that with Rick Victor. Yeah.
Ascension Victor.
Yeah. And so, but my dad.
And he did not dig the heels
yeah,
in.
Yeah, no, he's a good worker.
He did not dig the heels in, but my dad was just so funny because he didn't like being stiffed. But from what I understand, my dad was the most stiff guy ever.
Hmm.
But he didn't like being stiffed. So he didn't want anyone stiffing him, but he was very stiff with everyone else.
Well, here's something that's very funny. So I never met Anvil until he came to WCW, him and Davey. And those guys, when they came in there, they were like, they couldn't believe how dysfunctional WCW was. Like Anvil mentioned, you'd never been paid so much money to do nothing.
Yeah.
And they would show up there and just be just hanging around. And because I was traveling with Benoit and Eddie and Dean, we then inherited Davey and Jim because they're Calgary guys. And like,
right.
And I was like, guys, do we really want to go back to six in a van? Because we had started with six. We had pared it down to four.
That's
nuts. And Ben was like, no, they're, you know, they're part of the family. Like, I get they're part of the family. Do we really have to do this? Because then now we have to worry who's going to the gym and who wants to do this and who wants to do that. And so then I was not stuck, but traveling with Davey and Anvil. So it was like, I don't remember them being hard to travel. There's just two extra guys and they couldn't believe what was going on.
And not small guys.
Not small guys. And also very outspoken and, you know, drinking beer in the car, whatever it was they were doing.
Yep.
But I had to work with Anvil once. And this is when I was finally getting a push in WCW.
This is when Davey just took off. We went to England and then Jim
was there on his own?
Yeah, he's like, Davey was supposed to go to TV and do a couple more weeks and then meet us in England. And when he was dropping us off at the airport, he was like, and he just bought a ticket and...
Oh, you guys were working for like Dixon or something?
No, we were just going on like a family vacation.
Oh.
And then so he
just split.
Yeah, so he just... And then I remember seeing Jim after and he's like, Davey, you left me alone for the last 6 weeks. I've been working all these guys, Scott Norton, Chris Jericho.
So this is when I was getting a push in WCW. I think it was the TV champion at the time. And I was a cruiserweight for a long time. Even though I weighed 225 pounds, they still put me in a cruiserweight thing. So there was a little bit of a stigma. I said this on a podcast once, or in my book, and Bischoff got so mad. But there was a real stigma if you were a cruiserweight to work with the heavyweight guys. Booker T never wanted to do it. And Jim, I remember when I had to work with them, they were putting me over. And Jim's like, well, he's a cruiserweight. And so, anyways, we had a match. And I remember it being a really good match. But the finish was the Walls of Jericho. when I got, I could not turn him over.
I don't doubt it.
And either he didn't want to be turned over or he didn't understand the concept. And he'd been wrestling for 20 years. Yeah, so I think he just didn't want to get turned over. And I could not turn this guy, as you can imagine. He's like a bowling ball, 300 pounds. And I remember I tried. I couldn't do it. I tried again. And I haven't watched it back, but in my mind, I didn't know what to do. It's live TV, yeah. And I couldn't turn him over. Oh, I just couldn't turn him over. And the best thing of all is there's a WCW trading card that I have to sign all the time. And who do I have the legs of? The pink tights with the anvils down the side. And I'm like, of course. It looks good there, but I couldn't. And I think I eventually turned him over a bit. And I don't think he was doing it like, to double cross me. I just think he either got confused or he got excited or got frustrated or whatever it was. We just couldn't do it. We couldn't do it. And that's the one time I worked with Anvil. I still laugh to this day. So funny. If you couldn't turn this guy over and he wasn't going anywhere, it was just like so ridiculous.
Live on TV.
That was the one time I ever worked with him, man. But it was like I said, we actually had a really good match, but I just remember that finish.
I think my dad, sometimes he got really, if he was very set in his ways, which actually brings me to a funny story, Total Divas spoiler.
Oh, so there's a Total Divas in the can with him on it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is funny season. Because there's a whole season.
Because I saw one cat at the funeral. I'm like, who is that guy? He was the producer from Total Divas.
And it's funny because I actually said to the producers.
What's that guy's name?
Russell.
Russell, yeah.
I said to the producers, you know, Russell was so wonderful to my mom and dad. Like, he featured my dad on so many episodes of Total Divas because they all fell in love with my dad.
He knows what to do.
And he was just funny and different. Yeah. Like, he just stood out. And my dad was born for reality TV. He was just so funny. And so they called. Russell just was calling to say, you know, hey, I'm really sorry about everything. And just, he was crying and like beside himself about when he found out about my dad's passing. And I said to Russell, I go, you know what? You guys were so great to my dad and so kind and so sweet and like just featured him front and center. I said, I would love for my dad to get another little spotlight. If you guys want to come and, you know, if you want to film his service and, you know, my dad would love that. He would love all the attention. He would love it. And so they came. That's why Russell was there.
Did they film it?
They did film some of the service. Oh, wow. And they were very like,
that's cool though.
Just the one camera kind of out of
just
the way.
And you know, that's the thing is you didn't even notice that they were there. No. They were very discreet. And I thought, you know, my dad would just love to be honored. And so my dad is in all this whole season coming up of Total Divas. And we had this funny, what was the story I was going to get to?
You mentioned he was set in his ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is why you're good at this.
I'm paying attention.
Get me back on track. I'm like babbling on right now.
Your heart. I gotcha.
You got it. And so my dad, we were doing this hot yoga and my sister and I started doing yoga and we just love doing hot yoga. And so I thought this would be funny. Like my dad should come and do yoga with us. It'd be funny just to see my dad trying to do these poses. And so my dad, we were trying to get him to wear yoga clothes because you can't go into a yoga class wearing jeans or, you know, motocross pants or like, and so I was trying to give my dad these little shorts, but I didn't realize when we gave him the shorts, they were like, they were neon green and they were kind of like thin. And I thought, oh, when we start the hot yoga class, this could be really funny. My dad's wearing these skin tight, neon green, see-through shorts and it's going to get really hot and we're all going to get really sweaty in this class.
Right.
And my dad, for the life of him, just like you said, when he wouldn't let you turn him over in the Walls of Jericho, he would not put on the pants. And I go, Daddy, I will give you $10,000 right now if you put the pants on. Of course, I wasn't going to give him that. I just was making it up. Right. I go, Daddy, I'll buy you a motorcycle. Put the shorts on.
Right.
And he goes, my dad's like, no. And I go, Daddy, put the pants on. My dad was like, I'm not doing it. And I was like bribing my dad with large amounts of money, a new motorcycle. I was like, you can have our house. Like my dad's like, no, I don't want to. Like he didn't care what I offered. He wasn't putting the shorts on and he stuck to his guns and he was like, nope. And to this day I laugh because I was like, I just thought how funny would that be? If like I got my dad into this yoga class and he was, you know,
when you guys came back here, he was still pretty hot about it.
He was mad about it.
Yeah.
He was mad.
They wanted me to. put on these silly shorts.
These bicycle shorts.
Yeah.
That were so green and like, very thin.
If he didn't want to do something, he didn't want to do it. And that's probably what happened with you, unfortunately.
I think he got in his head. He said, I'm not going to do this move. And I'm not.
He said, have the rest of the match.
I'm a strong dude, but I was like, I remember almost thinking like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm just going to drop the legs and maybe hit him with an elbow drop or something. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, he's so funny.
So growing up in the business, when do you remember going to see your dad wrestle at all? And when did you kind of figure out that it was not completely real?
My dad didn't really want us around his work too much because my dad was like my grandfather, Stu. He was very traditional. And when my dad was in WWE for a good portion of it, there was only Sensational Sherry and Wendy Richter and Miss Elizabeth. And like, there was very few women, especially in the 80s. There was just a handful of women. And so my dad, you know, he loved Luna Vachon. That was one of his favorite girls. He just thought she was awesome. And she was, again, unique. Different.
Absolutely.
Great character, just stood out. And I think my dad found that. Like, he liked that about her, is that she was so different. He'd always say, like, he'd always tell me that he wished I would have met Luna Vachon. But he didn't want us really around it because he felt like it was very much like it was just kind of a man's world. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want us seeing the tough and rough side of it. So he was very protective of us girls, his daughters. Like, we were just very, very protected. Whereas Brett would have his kids around it more. But his kids, you know, his two sons were boys. And I don't know if Brett had his daughters around it much either, but we were protected from it. I didn't see a lot of it. I do remember one very special show that we all went to, which was the Canadian Stampede in 1997, I believe.
I was there.
And
you were there too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We all came to that show, and that was the last time that my entire family was in the ring together. Owen and Davey and my dad and Brett and Pillman and like just everyone was together. It was the last time our whole family was in the ring together. And that was so special. I just remember like that being such a special. I remember being in that time thinking this is all so cool. Like, and you know, obviously things got crazy after that, but
there was so many hearts in the ring that night.
It was like 30.
It was like, yeah.
And
yeah. It's like the Royal Rumble.
A couple stragglers too.
Who's that kid? I don't know.
Brett was like, I don't think any of us know that, you know, but my dad.
It's funny, if you watch it back, you'll see like Jim's the one guiding Stu into the ring and stuff, and Helen.
Yeah.
But my dad was a real, like, as burly and rough and tough as he was really a gentleman. He and my mom were married. This year would have been 40 years. And they were, you know, my dad was extremely, like, he knew my mom was in charge. He knew my mom was the boss. My mom was, you know, she really wore the pants, even though, you know, they had like their ups and downs.
He wore the pink spandex is a good combination.
But he didn't wear the green yoga pants.
And my dad really liked my mom kind of being in charge. Like my mom was kind of like Stu, and my mom has a lot of mannerisms like Stu. She's like very stoic, like my grandfather. And my dad, he just like, there was nobody in the world that he loved more than my mom. Like she was just his, you know, she was just his everything. And my mom had my dad's back. Like no matter what sort of conflict, like my mom and dad were like something out of Sopranos or Goodfellas, but no matter what kind of conflict they were, you know, having, whether my dad didn't want to wear tight spandex or whether he didn't, even if my mom said a swear word, my dad would be like, Ellie, will you watch your language? You know? And like, it was just funny. Cause my dad was such a bundle of contradictions, but
so let's talk about Jim and Stu. Because I know we talked before about how Stu brought him in and all that stuff. Was there ever any stories that happened between the two of them? Did they hang out, you know, before Stu passed away?
My grandfather was obsessed with my dad. Like, I think, as Brett mentioned at the service, my dad was the last person that ever really trained with Stu. Like, that was the last student.
The actual Stu Hart trained.
Yeah, that was performer. My dad was his last student. And my grandfather was obsessed with no matter what my dad did, no matter what mistakes my dad made in his life, it didn't matter to my grandfather. Stu.
Yeah, he'd come walking in the house and it was.
My dad.
That was his guy?
Yeah.
My grandfather would look my dad up and down and be like, he didn't care if my dad had just, you know, he looked at my dad, he looked at his neck, he looked at his arms, he felt his body up, and he was like, Jim is a solid. You know, he's a solid SOB, and like that, he'd always call my dad a big bastard, and like, you know, he'd call him
to get him back on track.
Yeah, and he was obsessed with my dad, and it's just so funny because I remember my dad had been let go from WWE probably like the third, fourth, maybe fifth time.
He's up there with Marty Jannetty, isn't he?
He's had some runs.
He had a few different runs, but I remember my mom writing a letter because back then they didn't have, you know, emails and they just had phones or snail mail, like a letter. My mom wrote a letter to Vince and it just kind of, you know, Vince has and had such a special relationship with everybody in my family. And my mom wrote this letter to Vince and I found the letter. I'm going to show it to you later. But my mom wrote this letter to Vince saying, you know, just in the future, if he, you know, give my, and Vince did, in the future, please give Jim another chance or take it into consideration. You'd like to continue to work for WWE. And Vince knew that my dad just had to kind of get a few things sorted out in his life. And Vince wrote my mom this really beautiful letter back. Mm. And he was like, Ellie, at this time right now, I think Jim needs to learn a lesson. It was like
very fatherly.
Like very, very fatherly. And I have the letter and one day I will show it to Vince, but it reminded me of my grandfather Stu and how like forgiving and loving Vince was even towards my dad, even when he was going through his ups and downs. He was like, you know, right now at this time we feel it's best Jim takes a breather sort of thing. And like, and then he signed it like Vince, and he wrote, you know, he took the time to write this letter, mm-hmm. and then sign it, send it back to my mom. And it was like their communication, their mutual understanding. Like Vince respected my dad, but like, and just like Stu, but he understood that my dad, like, you know, at that time my dad needed to kind of grow. We needed to kind of be, you know, he needed some distance from mm-hmm. WWE. And, but Stu was like that too, very forgiving of my dad and very, you know, he loved my dad, and my dad just had this charisma. Sometimes charisma can get you through so much.
Absolutely.
My dad got out of so many different things in his life because he had so much, he could talk the pants off anyone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and that's important, you know, to be able to do that.
You have great life skill.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially for a guy like Anvil who was probably in some trouble. Because I know Stu went to bat for Jim a few times, even back when the original territory was sold to Vince, right?
Yeah, like Bruce Pritchard will talk about it on his podcast a lot. Like he'll do a Stu impersonation and it's always, you got a room for Anvil on the roster? Like, and it's always like, he's like, every time Jim came back, it was Stu making that phone call and Vince being... That he loved Stu, and he did love Jim, so he was like, "Okay, we'll find something."
Mm-hmm. And Vince really loved
Stu. Stu didn't see any bad ever. It was either Jim was doing great, or if something had happened, it was we just got to get him back on track. Then he'll be great again.
But like you said, just looking at his neck, that's a Stu thing.
Big time.
Grab your arm and guess how much you weigh.
What are you about 225?
He was like a carnival barker. You could get it right just by feeling your arm.
100%.
Right? About 280. I just had this talk with Lesnar not too long ago, but
with Brock.
Yeah, he guessed Brock's weight at that Calgary the one time, and you were the one who introduced them. Mm. But
that was probably, gosh, what year did Stu pass away? Was it 7, 8?
It was the day you wrestled Brock.
Yeah, so it was probably 2003 or so. Yeah,
2003, I think.
Yeah.
Or end of 2002, maybe.
Yeah, it was around that time frame.
My mom said 2003. That's
3-on-3.
Right before I went to Japan.
Okay. It's the only time I ever worked with Brock. It was Calgary and Edmonton, October, those two shows. How about Owen? That Owen and Jim team together as the New Heart Foundation.
Yeah.
Did they get along well as well?
No, my dad and Owen got along great. And I think Owen was very straight-laced, very, other than his intense practical jokes, mm-hmm. I think Owen really looked after my dad. And Brett really did too. And that's why I, you know, not to get back to Brett, but like, Brett said that he owed a lot of success in his career to my dad, but in fairness to Brett, and I know this isn't about Brett, I know this is about my dad, but I believe strongly that my dad was never meant to be a singles guy. He was always meant to be a tag team.
I was going
to
say that earlier.
He was, and I just feel like that, and I'm probably the most, just being in the business, understanding some things about, not that, you know, I understand tag teams like nobody else, but I just feel strongly that my dad was never meant to be a singles guy, and that he and Brett complimented each other so much. But I just know my dad's personality, and I know that I feel like Brett really kept them on track, and Brett really gave my dad needed structure. Mm. My mom provided that for my dad. She gave my dad structure that he needed, and
she provided it at home, and Brett provided it.
And Brett provided that for him at work. And Brett was like, and I guess that's the quality of heart. The hearts, what makes hearts so special is that, even though they're all a little offbeat, they're all just extremely loyal. They're fiercely loyal. If they stand by you, they'll stand by you through thick and thin. It doesn't matter if you're on top or you're on the bottom. That's just how they roll. Mm. And Brett was fiercely loyal to my dad, protected my dad, kept them on track the way that my mom did at home. And I feel like if it wasn't for Brett, I think my dad, I don't know if my dad would have had the success in WWE that he did. and Owen and Brett and Davey, and they all kind of kept as a little unit. Even when, you know, Bulldogs left WWE, and like they all were so close because they started together. And when you travel the road with someone, you know, you just build this unbreakable bond that you can't explain it to people. Only when you travel with them, only when people do what we do they understand that.
Yeah, like when Davey passed away, Jim started wearing this one of Davey's knee pads, a Bulldog Union Jack knee pad, as an elbow pad on all the shows he was doing.
But I was going to say that
because there's certain guys like you know, if you look at, let's say, Aerosmith. Okay, everyone knows Steven Tyler and Joe Perry, but there's the other guitar player, Brad Whitford. If he wasn't an Aerosmith, probably wouldn't be famous. But in that band, in that chemistry, he's perfect. I think Anvil was like that, like you mentioned. Something about the chemistry with those two and the Hart Foundation, right. he was perfect for that. And that's why he's so legendary within the business, because that is one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And it's okay that you're not a huge single star.
Sure, there's
nothing wrong with that, because in his you know, legacy, that was the perfect role for him.
And that was what my dad just needed. Brett, he needed, you know, and that was that. And thank
but at
God,
the time Brett needed him too,
exactly,
because Brett wasn't going to make that. it as far as he would have.
Yes, yeah, so that's why it's a great pairing.
Hold on one second.
Yeah, no, exactly.
They did need each other.
They didn't,
and I think they both knew that, even if they didn't. I know Brett has expressed that later, even if they didn't express it at that time. I think they both knew it, and I think...
I think, too, that if you're talking about Bret Hart in 1986 or 85, he was not a good promo.
No,
and he wasn't particularly charismatic. I mean, he could deliver his lines the way he had to, but it was Anvil was the one, the laugh. You know, he made it, like, he made them crazy, where Brett was a technician.
Yep.
But Anvil
once the bell rang, that's Brett's place, and that's where he goes to work.
Yeah, and also I found that Jesse Ventura, he must have loved Anvil as well, because he always put Anvil over, which made us believe more in him
that
as well.
Crazy and
the powerhouse and that sort of thing, you know?
I agree, and I think exactly, it's like we said earlier and we said last time, just the combination. They're very different than the rest of the tag teams at that time. Everyone else is the same, or very similar to their partner.
Right.
The Bees are the same.
Right. They look the same. Yeah.
Bulldogs, same
size. Look the same, yeah.
But Hart Foundation, for some weird reason, this one team, and there was like some poll, and this might have been 5 years ago or longer on some WWE.com poll, but like they won some voting of like best tag team of all time, the Hart Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I strongly, I mean, obviously their work and everything they did is why. But I strongly feel that them being so different from the other guy, I think, helps.
You know, I had to Google that they weren't in the WWE Hall of Fame. I was like, what are you talking about? Of course they're in it. Like,
I
had no idea that they weren't as a tag team. But I think, like, once again, like, so many people texting that, you know, you talk to once in a while, but everyone was talking about the Anvil and remembering, like, that was such a great team. And also, too, with Jimmy Hart. I mean, it worked. And that's one thing, like, for Vince to put them together, or whoever's vision it was.
Right.
He made all three of those guys top stars, and they wouldn't have been if they were just all on their own.
I agree.
They all complemented each other as a unit, and like
it was kind of like what Brett said at the service, that he was getting ready to quit.
Really? So, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
really.
He said he was getting ready to quit right before, and then they went with his idea to. He didn't tell
him. I want him to be the cowboy.
He didn't tell him he was getting ready to quit, but he was like, okay, I've kind of run my course here. Mm-hmm. And then the next week is when they said, hey, we're going with your idea.
So,
who knows what would have happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did Jim still do like signings and stuff like that? Was he out there?
Rarely in the last year or two. I didn't really want my dad doing signings. Not that I didn't want him seeing the fans, or I really like to protect my dad. And like I said, I just knew that my dad, sometimes being around a lot of people would be overwhelming to him. And so that's why I was like, you know what? I want my dad and my mom to have no stress in their life. And I think for my dad, sometimes getting on a plane and like feeling overwhelmed and getting into a surrounding, like a hotel. And it just, I think sometimes the last 2 years of my dad's life, I just felt like it was a little overwhelming for him. So I just, like, my mom and dad, you know, I just made sure that they were protected. And my dad, I think he would have loved the interaction with the fans more, because he loved feeling important. He loved that spotlight. My dad loved to be in front of people and entertain, but I think also at the same time he felt a little overwhelmed with his condition. Mm-hmm. So I very rarely let my dad do signings. He maybe did two in a year, maybe. But anybody that was lucky enough to get him to sign stuff, you know, obviously now it's going to be very special that they got him to sign anything, because I really kept him kind of protected.
It's funny, as you were talking, I remember actually another Anvil story. It was one of my very first days in wrestling camp when Keith showed up, which was probably one of 3 days that he was there out of the 3 months. Wow. And somehow he was telling a story about, yeah, I just came back from, I was working out with Anvil and some guy was doing 300-pound bench press. And he went, oh, that's really impressive. Why don't you put another 50 pounds on? Ah, put another 100 pounds on. Hey, put another 150 pounds on. Did a 450-pound bench press. Went ba-boom, ba-boom, ka-ching. All right, let's blow this popsicle stand. And off they went. I guess they're at BJ's gym or something like that. It's just like,
that's how my dad rolled.
Oh, good. Well, put 50 on. Put another 100. Put 150 on. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's one of the guys that was training in the dungeon before. He had a story that he ran to the gym at the gym. And he said, Anvil asked if he could work in. He was doing bench press. He said, yeah, man, no problem. He's like, you want to get in? I think he was doing 225. He's like, no, you can go. So he goes. He maybe puts on another plate, 315. He said, hey, Jim, you want to work in? Nope, you go. And then the guy goes and is starting to get pretty heavy, puts on 25, 365. Jim looks, passes on that set. Finally, 405, the guy said, I can't do 405. Jim's like, okay, I'll take over now. And
just banging them out, right?
Didn't do any of the warm-up sets. Always dad, so unconventional. Just could walk in cold and just lift anything.
That was my dad. That was how my dad worked out. He would
if he could work in. He didn't work in at all.
He would work out by doing two sets of something.
Right.
He would literally walk up to a squat rack, squat 600 pounds and walk out of the gym.
That's it.
And then he'd be like, I'm out. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but I do remember growing up that my dad, I don't think I've ever told anybody this, including you. My dad, when we were growing up, we had a big, huge yard. And my dad, I remember how dedicated my dad was when he was on, this is in the 80s during the heyday of the Heart Foundation. And my dad would sprint across the lawn as fast as he could. And I remember, like, as a kid going, that's crazy that daddy's running so fast. He was like a racehorse running. He would have a start point where the mailbox was and then all the way to the neighbor's like edge of their lawn. But we had a big yard and a big house. And like my dad would run fast and hard. And that was his training. He would do these like wind sprints. And my dad would always take the shot put that we had in the garage, because my dad was a shot putter. And he'd always want my sisters and I to throw the shot put. And he'd always put it in the middle of the lawn, like, let's go. And we were all like, no. We didn't think anything. Growing up, we weren't like, wow, daddy was a great track and field athlete. It was always just like, our dad's a WWE. Like,
right.
We always just thought of him like, it was so cool that our dad was, we would take my dad's championship. We didn't even appreciate my dad's track career. We always just were like, whatever. Like, because, you know, like I said, it was like WWE was the cool thing. But my dad, when he had won the tag titles, we had taken, my sisters and I took out his championship out of his bag. And he had one of those silver Halliburtons.
They all had them back then,
and,
yes.
And it reeked of, not of cat pee, but that's, it didn't reek, I'm not surprised.
If this was Family Feud, I would have guessed cat pee.
It didn't reek of cat pee, but it reeked of, Brett would always give my dad this Icy Hot. And so it's reeked of Icy Hot.
All their stuff always smelled like Icy Hot.
Which they would also put on the Visine bottles, which I told last time, and rib each other by squirting Visine laced with Tiger Balm Icy Hot into each other's eyes. And that's so funny.
That's
yeah, good rib.
Gee, real funny. Yeah.
Real funny and real fun.
I'm blind now.
Yeah.
And we took, it's funny, our cat two paws is in.
Just Jericho. Go, oh, wow, he's right in my podcast bag. He's right in there.
Pawsy, don't wet in that.
You got a two paws cast. You got to get this picture. So go ahead, tell the story.
I'll let you get the picture.
I got it. Done.
But my sister stole my dad's championship out of his Halliburton. And my dad was getting ready to perform that night at Madison Square Garden with Brett. Uh-huh. And we took the title out of the bag, and we were running around the house, and my dad took off for the airport without the title. And then he was going through security. He was like, oh my God. He realized like he didn't have it. So my mom, of course, like my mom and dad were like I said, the only way I can describe their relationship was like Goodfellas. My dad was like Ray Liotta. My mom was the wife.
The shit she must have put up with. Oh,
and my mom raced back to our house from the Tampa airport. We lived in Land O'Lakes. She raced back to our house in Land O'Lakes in like 20 minutes, probably going crazy speed that I can't even describe, and got that championship back to my dad before he took off.
Oh, that's great.
And it was just like,
because people might not realize when you have a title, you have the title. You hold on to it.
It's your responsibility.
It's your responsibility to take it to and from the towns.
You can't.
When you're about to go on the road for the next 28 days.
That's right.
You can't.
Yeah, exactly.
So my mom got that back to me. I just remember when we were kids, we just thought it was so cool. Like, we just had such a... And then my dad would come home. He'd be gone. And I tried to kind of mention this at the funeral, but I didn't want to get long-winded at the funeral. I really didn't want to be Hillbilly Jim. Bless his heart.
Gosh.
Bless his heart. Call. I love Hillbilly Jim, but I didn't want to get too long-winded.
Dude, yeah. You're talking about his Hall of Fame speech, which was 9 hours. I think he's still doing it, as a matter of fact.
It was long. And it was, you know, he was speaking from the heart, but it was very long. And I didn't want to be like, I just vowed to myself after that night. I was like, I just could never be like that. Yeah. And I mentioned that my dad, when he'd come home, one of the things that always stands out to me about my childhood, when my dad would get off the road, we had a routine because he'd be gone for like 28 days at a time. So my mom knew that we wouldn't see my dad very much because she kind of almost raised us as like a single mom.
And he
would
be home for like 4 days or something,
like,
right?
Maybe my dad would be home maybe 3 days.
Gosh.
Maybe the weekend. So my mom knew that those days that my dad came home, we have to really make those days count. And so my mom would let us miss school and we'd pick my dad up from the airport. My dad would have presents for us because we love presents. Like I told you about when I would give my dad presents, that was like a learned behavior. And my dad loved presents and he would have all these presents for us. Little things like, you know, when he'd fly first class, they give you the little bag and like the little eye thing and the socks. And I remember my sisters and I loving those little.
So great, yeah.
And like we thought it was the greatest thing ever. And we were like, Daddy has this little Delta bag for us. And like my dad would get us kimonos from Japan and, you know, special little dolls from, you know, when they stayed at the Kio Plaza.
Yeah.
And so my dad would always have presents for us. That was our first thing. We got presents. And then we'd go to Toys R Us and my dad would let us get whatever we wanted. And so we'd always get like a Barbie or whatever. And then we'd go to 7-Eleven because my mom was like stew. She didn't, there was no junk food allowed in our house. Like my mom, it was like, we had the worst lunches as kids because it would be like a sloppy ham and cheese sandwich that melted in the Florida sun with an apple stuck on top of the, and my dad was like, Callie, cool. You know, he was like, we're going to go to 7-Eleven. We'd all walk into 7-Eleven. That was our, I think as a kid, that was our favorite thing was 7-Eleven. We go into 7-Eleven. My dad would let us get four things each. We would get a Slurpee. We would get a certain candy. We would get chips and like something else, like a Ring Pops or whatever. And my dad would, we would all go into checkout. We would all be like, you know, that was just our thing. We'd get our little junk food and we would take our time eating the Doritos. Everything was savored from those little trips. And my dad would let us stay up until all hours of the night. We could stay up till 1 or 2 in the morning if we wanted. My dad would make us margaritas. And he would make margaritas for my mom and him. He was a master margarita maker. That was his thing. Cali thing. He would make these margaritas and he had a special way of making them. He dumped the entire bottle of tequila into the blender and then mix in the juice. Mm-hmm. And they were like so strong, but that was for him and my mom to have. And then he'd make us a little sample version of that.
Virgin.
Semi-virgin.
Yeah.
I know like I can get a little edgy on your show, but they had a little bit of tequila in them. And
what are you, like 8 years old?
But to this day, the girls, like the twins, and when we're filming Total Divas, I always love like a margarita because it always reminds me of when, like, because of my dad, I'm very, like, I live a pretty clean life because I'm always like, I want to be the opposite.
Yeah.
But I love tequila to this day because my dad would always let us have a little tiny taste of it. And we'd go swimming in the pool. My dad would play the Doors. He loved the Doors. And we would play the Doors. That's why we played Riders on the Storm at my dad's funeral.
Right.
And so we would listen to the Doors. We'd go swimming in the pool. We would have our margaritas and we would, you know, eat our chips and our toys. And it was like, we were just spoiled rotten when my dad was home just for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then when my dad would leave, it was back to business. But those were great child. Those, we made the times count with my dad. We made the moments count. Even if it was just for a few days, we just made it count.
Mm-hmm. As we wind down here, did you talk to Vince at all after, did he talk to you after Jim passed away?
I did talk to him and he just was so, so supportive. And so like, he just was, Vince is just, I know Vince has always loved my dad and they've always just like Stu. And I talk affectionately about my grandfather Stu, but I kind of feel the same way about Vince. He just has that fatherly, Vince is very fatherly to a lot of us. And I think Vince really cared about my dad and gave my dad so many opportunities and so many, you know, opportunities to shine. And Vince was just so supportive and so understanding. And he just wanted me to be with my mom and my sisters and just pretty much was open to whatever I needed. And what was so sweet was just being included in SummerSlam, because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to make the show. And, you know, Vince really wanted me there. And I think for as long as I live, I will remember, like, thinking to myself, you know what? I needed that. Mm-hmm. I actually really needed to go to SummerSlam and get my mind off of things.
Yeah, of course.
And Vince wanted me to have that. He just wanted me to get my mind off things.
And you wore, like, Jim's jacket too, didn't you?
Yeah, and it was like, I just felt so proud walking out there. And, like, I felt like my dad had a lot to do with that. Like, and it was just so nice because I got to honor my dad. I got my mind off of things. I almost wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to go to SummerSlam because I was like, gosh, this is just so soon. I just don't know if I can do it. And then after the funeral, once we were done with the funeral, I was like, you know what? I kind of have to start getting back to being Natty. I have to start getting back to living. And, like, SummerSlam was only 6 days after my dad died, but I also just wanted to get back to being me because I felt like I was in such a fog from Monday, the day that my dad passed away, to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday was the funeral. I just felt like I was in this blur. And for Vince to want me to be at SummerSlam and obviously, you know, sharing that special moment with Ronda, it was just, and I told Vince that, I said it was just really what I needed. It was what I needed to get my mind off of everything. And it was just like, I just wanted to, I was scared to go because I was like, I don't know if I would be emotionally stable just because I am so close to my dad. And I didn't want to be crying in front of everyone and having people see me cry and just not knowing if somebody brought up my dad, would I start crying? And I was, there was moments where I did kind of break down a little bit, but there was moments that I was totally fine. I just wanted to go out there. And when everybody saw my dad's jacket, the entire world got it. Everybody understood.
Yeah, it's like I said, the trials and tribulations of the Harts and the McMahons go back, you know, 40, 50 years, but Vince still respects your family. And so does the WWE universe. I can't believe I'm using Vince's vernacular. So do the wrestling fans. Sorry. They appreciate the lineage. And for you, you know, you would come out before to Brett's music, but coming out with Anvil's jacket, I mean, that's who you are. And people know it. And that's why, like, I was really happy to see, because, like I said, we've seen so many guys pass away, and sometimes you get a graphic or whatever, but Jim got, like, that piece.
Yeah, he had a full seg.
Like you said,
3 minutes on primetime TV.
That is prime real estate. I mean, I've had 100 matches shorter than that on Raw.
So have I.
You know? Yeah, that get cut shorter than that. Right. So, and obviously, it all goes through Vince. For Vince to approve that and say, because Vince could also say, it's too long. But to give 3 minutes to the Anvil, that says a lot.
And even like the end of the seg before that was, hey, up next.
Tribute to Jim graphic. That's cool.
Came back, and play that video, then go to the on camera. Now I know all the
even Ronda.
That's your thing,
Graves
now,
and Michael Cole and Renee kind of talking about it. You know what I mean? So it just kept, like,
it's a big deal.
Yeah,
and even Ronda opening up Raw with,
that's right. You know, she mentioned him too.
Like, just talking about my dad, and like, I just think my dad would have been so happy. And like, I told Vince, I was like, and I just feel so strongly in my heart, like, Vince, you know, obviously we all work hard in WWE, but without the platform of, like, my dad and I got this special connection because of his career in WWE and because of what I did in WWE. We got this special bond that, like, is just so incredibly rare. Only a few people can say that they share that, like Randy Orton and like Charlotte Flair and like Tamina Snuka. And like, there's just, I was talking to Roman Reigns about
it. There's another one, yeah.
I was just saying, he was saying the same thing about his brother who passed away. Mm-hmm. And he was just saying, like, we just got this special little connection because of that. Mm-hmm. And I thanked Vince. I said, thank you for giving my dad those opportunities. Because of those opportunities, my dad and I got to, like, have this special connection as WWE superstars. And we had this little wrestling connection. That was what was, like, I feel bad because my sisters were very close to my dad, too. But
it's different, though. Yeah.
It was just a little different because, you know, when my dad had his ups and downs, my sisters sometimes weren't as forgiving of my dad. And, you know, my dad, I just, as I learned, like, he was imperfect, but that was what kind of made him special. And I understood all those things. I was willing to overlook a lot of things with my dad, a lot of his imperfections, because we just had this very special little bond in wrestling. And that I owe that to Vince, because of, without his company, my dad wouldn't have had that platform to be so unique. And Vince just, through thick and thin, Vince has just been awesome to my family. And when you go through hard times, you realize, like, wow, like WWE, they're just like, the company's very classy, especially
very
when
classy,
you,
yeah. Very I thought classy. It was cool that Stephanie was there. Last couple things, there's a picture online. It's actually pretty sad of the five guys at Calgary Stampede. Was the paper called?
Yeah, Canadian Stampede.
Canadian Stampede. It's Fart Foundation. And, it, you know, Pillman, Owen, Brett's in the middle, Davey and Jim. And somebody made it to where Brett is in color and the rest are in black and white. Brett's the sole survivor of that team. I feel sorry for Brett, man. I feel for him. Because that's, you know, he's lost so many guys. And you look at that picture, and it was only 20 years ago, and everybody's gone. I feel for Brett. And, you know, as hard as it is for you, obviously that's your father, you know, but and your father-in-law, but that's Brett's, like, those are his brother-in-laws, and, you know, Pillman might as well
best have friends.
Been. Best friends, yeah.
I actually think, like,
throw Kurt Henning in there with
yeah,
Brett.
Brian Adams.
Rick Rude, yeah. You know.
All of his bros, right?
My dad, yeah, my I felt like in talking to Brett, and Brett was a very important part of the funeral, actually. And Brett I almost didn't know if he was going to be able to make it because it was such a far distance for him to travel. And I said to Brett, I said, I understand if you can't make it, but I really would love to have you there. And I actually think Brett is taking my dad's passing really hard.
Yeah.
I think it was the first time in my life that I've ever seen Brett cry. We went out for dinner and, we went out for dinner, myself, Brett, and his wife, Stephanie. We just had this private little dinner. We just wanted to catch up, and I just needed to clear my head, and Brett was crying. It was only for 20 seconds, maybe. He started crying. He was telling a story about my dad, and then he just stopped, and he started crying, and he couldn't catch his breath. Like, he was like, he couldn't...
Speak.
Mm. Yeah, he could breathe, but he couldn't, like, he couldn't get the words out. And, it was like, I'd never seen Brett cry like that before. I just don't remember him. I never remember him crying like that. And I felt like so bad at the table. Cause I was like, gosh, like, I can't believe how hard Brett's taking my dad's death. And I think he's almost taking it harder than anyone. And for me, I almost feel like it's been 9 days since my dad died. And I almost feel like it's not real. Mm-hmm. Like, I just feel like I'm going to go to my mom and dad's house and I'm going to see my dad. Like, I don't think it's totally set in, but you know, everybody handles things differently, but I think Brett's taking it really hard.
Yeah, yeah. Last question. What's your favorite Anvil memory, match-wise? Like, I'm talking about Jim the Anvil, the character. And first of all, I've been meaning to say this. I love, love, love the fact at the funeral. I was showing Jessica this. You get the little card for the funeral. You know, that's the little pamphlet.
Yeah.
And on the front, it's a picture, and it just says, the Anvil.
Yeah.
Then you open it up, it says, James Henry Neidhart. It's like,
he wanted that.
I love it. Like, how wrestling is that? Like, the Anvil.
He was the Anvil first.
James Neidhart, yeah.
That's what my dad's urn had on it, too.
Oh,
my sisters
great.
And I, we wanted it. Like, my dad, that's what I keep digressing. I'm, like, all over the place, but... My heart, total heart.
Yeah, yeah.
But my dad loved being an entertainer. He was like, he could never work in an office. He was born to entertain. And that's what Total Divas did, was like, when my dad couldn't wrestle, entertain. And so my sisters are like, I don't know where the hell they came from. They're both like Martha Stewart's daughters.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Yeah.
Muffy is like a teacher, graduated with honors, like the most prim and proper person you'll ever meet. And Jenny is the same way. She's like, literally Kate Middleton's sister. Like, they're both like,
all three of you are so pretty too, with the Anvil as your father. Like, well, you guys beat the odds.
My dad before he became the Anvil was really handsome.
Yeah.
And but we had Jenny, Muffy, and I, we're all 1 year apart, and we were like, daddy has to be, we call my dad daddy.
Yeah.
We never, and people would even say on Total Divas, they're like, you call your dad daddy. And I never made the transition.
Yeah, you stayed daddy as a little girl.
Like, as a little girl, what day do you go, we're going to start calling you dad?
Yeah.
Like, we never did. It was just always daddy. Even when we were mad at my dad, we were like, daddy, like, and it was only daddy. It's just daddy and mommy. That's it. That's all they will ever be to me. Mm. And we were like, daddy needs to have Anvil on his urn.
God,
and they
so great.
Even found a little, like, decal that they made a little Anvil, engraved it. And Jenny and Muffy and I were like, we want to make sure that daddy... That's the picture he loved. That embodied him. That was like that little look.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted that. And then of course, like, on the back, I have my mom and my dad, but we just wanted that. So
that was great. It was great. But your favorite anvil?
I'll let TJ answer this because he's more of the wrestling.
I would have to say Canadian Stampede, but the moment is like they all come. They all kind of have these short little separate entrances. So like first Pillman comes out, then Jim comes out, and they all come out to like and it's very funny, but each reaction is a little bit bigger. But they all come out to these pretty giant reactions as like almost as singles guys. Obviously, it's a five-on-five match, but they have these short little entrances, and you get kind of a little beat out there, and they all, and then the cool moment where like Brett comes out and like high fives everybody, and they come walking down. So even before the match, like the stage is set. It was going to be the most amazing thing you've ever seen.
You know, for me, it's not just like I wouldn't say like Hart Foundation had a lot of great matches, like Bulldogs and Demolition and all that stuff. But for me, it's just the whole time of that. WWF Saturday Night's Main Event, and Hart Foundation was always included. And I always go back to, and I'm not getting this wrong, but it's the Hart Foundation holding Macho Man as Honky Tonk breaks the guitar over his head.
Yeah.
I just remember like just the combination of those guys, and I believe like if Anvil is holding you,
you're not getting out.
Like right. You know, because I knew. I mean, I didn't know wrestling wasn't real. But I just knew, like, that guy's, like, if he's holding, you're not escaping. And just the whole concept of the Hart Foundation is these amazing heels that turn babyface and the colors and the... To me, that was part of my love affair of how I got into wrestling. Because I enjoyed AWA, but WWF and the Hart Foundation were top three for me.
Yeah, the colors.
It was Hogan, Steamboat, and the Hart Foundation, you know?
And you have that, you know, Calgary style. And you're, like I said, you're kind of have a lot of Calgary, like... You have a lot of the qualities that those guys from Calgary came from, had, like Dynamite, and if you think of Davey, and you think of all the people that, you know, Brett and Owen and my dad, like, oh, there was a unique, even Hirohashi was in Calgary, you know, like
they had so many guys,
like unique hybrid style is what I'm trying to say. But you also understood, like my dad, the showmanship,
the character aspect of it.
And so my dad always appreciated that in people because you had beautiful costumes and flamboyant colors, and you had a unique hairdo. And my dad, I think that's what he really brought to the Hart Foundation, was that unique little entertainment edge. I think it's why Vince liked my dad so much, because Brett tells the story of, you know, because Vince loves a good athlete, but Vince also likes the entertainment.
It's the character, man.
The character,
yeah.
the
personality.
Yeah, and so Brett tells the story of when Vince first met my dad, Davey, Dynamite, and himself. And of course, as we know, Brett would go on to become, you know, the most successful of them. But Vince was just drawn to my dad. My dad was the first one that he introduced himself to. And he saw like Vince reminds me a lot of my grandfather. He saw my dad. He saw his neck. He saw his arms. It was like,
of course.
And my dad had this look, and my dad had this natural charisma, and Vince was just drawn to my dad. And I think I remember Brett saying, like, you know, he was just so like in tune with my dad. That was the star. That was the one that he was going to push. And like, you know, my dad just had that little, he was an athlete. He was, you know, played for the Dallas Cowboys, played for the Oakland Raiders, was trained by coached by Tom Landry, a very famous football coach. And I don't know shit about football.
Yeah, I know that name though.
But you know, his shot putting, this, that, and Vince just zeroed in on that. But Vince knew that my dad was an entertainer. And so I love that because my dad. You
know, it's interesting because when the Radicals first came in, and it was Benoit, Eddie, Dean, and Perry. And of course, at the time, it was all about Benoit. And actually, Perry was up there too. But Vince, I remember saying, Brian Gewirtz told me, Eddie's the one that Vince, really? Eddie? Eddie's the one. Because this is before Latino Heat.
Right. Vince picked him up before that?
Right off the bat, he said after one appearance, Eddie's the one that Vince thinks has it. I'm more than Perry and more than like Eddie. Because this is, like I said, there was no character of Eddie at the time.
Yeah.
But like you said, same with Anvil.
Vince just could sense an entertainer. And so I just love that.
What's your, rather than favorite in-ring, what's your favorite Total Divas Jim Neidhart moment?
God, there's so many.
It's gotta be the...
Lana?
Yeah.
My dad, by the way, was obsessed with Lana. Like, Chris, I have so many videos of my dad in my phone, and I would always say, Daddy, do you like Luke Gallows? And he'd be like, no. I'm going to send... I have a bunch of stuff. I want to find that letter from Vince. I want to show you that letter, and I want to send it. My dad loved Lana, and I'd always film videos with him and go, Daddy, do you like Lana? And he's like, oh yes, she's beautiful. And like, he would go off about Lana.
Yeah, he'd always remember Lana.
Lana and my dad would drink Fireball shots together. He was obsessed with Lana. And so there was this day that Lana and I are really close, but we've had a lot of little conflicts
in
the past, especially on Total Divas. She and I are like sisters. We fight and we make up.
Yeah.
and she drives me crazy, but I love her. So one day, my dad, my whole entire life, as we talked about earlier, would be obsessed with teaching me how to throw the shot put. And so I was training for this ladder match, and my dad was just like, somehow I was like, okay, daddy, you know what? You can teach me how to throw the shot put. If that's what you want, we will go in the yard. We won't climb a ladder. We'll get in the front lawn, and you can throw. For the first time in my life, you can show me how to throw a damn shot put. So Lana was over, and she wanted to be involved because, you know, what better way to put on a string bikini than to throw a shot put with Jim Neidhart on the front lawn. So in the driveway. So we're out there, and Lana, she somehow, the shot put, my dad's in the yard, and he's like, she's throwing it. It's landing on the grass. My dad's like, he's picking up the shot put. He's like, you're doing great. And he's like coaching her, and he's like, you're doing awesome. She was sucking. She was awful. And my dad just kept telling her how well she was doing and putting her over. And then she all of a sudden throws the shot put into the windshield of my car. And my dad was like,
for real or for?
Okay. I don't know what she was doing. Right. I think she was just trying to get attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's good at getting attention.
She's good at being extra. So Lana loves being a little extra. So somehow this shot put ended up in the windshield of the car. And my dad looked at me and he was like, she's so stupid. I can't. And I go, daddy. And he goes, because he was shocked because my dad loves Lana. But then all of a sudden he's like, I can't. How did she do that? And then my dad started freaking out. And he's like, oh my God. Like, what are we going to do? The car's wrecked. And so I go, daddy, because I was kind of like the parent. I go in the house right now. And I go, you don't want to say anything to upset Lana. And Lana's looking at me like Steve Urkel, did I do that sort of thing? And I go in the house. My dad can't calm down. He's like, oh my God, the car's wrecked.
Yeah, he came and told me.
And he came and found TJ in the bathroom. And he's like, she threw the shot put in the car. Like, and so I told my dad, I was trying to calm him down. And I was like, daddy, like I was trying to do anything to appease him and make him like relax. And I go, daddy, don't worry. I told Lana to do that. And my dad goes, Natty, you gotta let the boys in when you run these spots. Like, you gotta let the boys in on these spots. And it was so funny because he went back to it being like wrestling. And he was like, that was my favorite story.
Well, this is one other little thing. It may not have anything to do with anything, but I was just remembering, like, so after the screw job goes down, like, Jim actually wasn't under contract. It was like kind of a handshake deal at that point. And then, like, Davey leaves. Owen has a little month off. He comes back to the pay-per-view. No one knew what was happening with him. Of course, Brett's gone. Jim on a handshake deal. I think he's at Raw like maybe 2 weeks later, and he does a deal with like DX with Vader, and maybe even the next week too. He's still like, and he knew he had this WCW deal, but like
loyalty.
Yeah, it kind of speaks to his character a little bit. Like he clearly did not have to show up at those.
No, he said though on the pod, he said, I was just the guy making a living and providing for my family.
Yeah.
And you know, that was Brett's thing. And for him, he was still providing for his family. So thank you guys for doing
this. Chris.
Jim the Anvil, one in a million. And the world is a better place from having him in it.
And thank you so much for like just being supportive and awesome to my family, and just, you know, you coming to my dad's service for me, like, it just meant so much. And so I appreciate you and for putting up with us crazy hearts.
Hey man, let's find some fanny packs and a pink leather African hat. All right, thanks to Natty and Tyson for sharing more great stories about Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Rest in peace, Anvil. He was one in a million. One in 10 million, like Bret Hart said. All right, speaking of one in a million, how about the first one? The Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea inaugural voyage setting sail October 27th. Just weeks away, less than 6 weeks away, and there's less than 75 cabins left, so you'll have to book now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. If you want to come hang out in the ship with the incredible lineup of talent, remember, everything is included once you book your cabin. It's all included. All your food, all the activities on the ship are free. All the live podcasts, concerts, comedy shows, meet and greets, autograph signings, wrestling matches, everything in between. The only thing you got to pay for are alcohol and gambling. Hope you do a lot of both. And it's a huge lineup with the main event, the Alpha Club versus the Bullet Club. It's the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson versus Kenny Omega, Cody, and Marty Scurll. The first in-ring meeting of Jericho and Kenny Omega since the Tokyo Dome, besides when I surprise attacked him at All In. You're not going to want to miss this. It's only on the cruise. Also, Ring of Honor versus Impact, Marty Scurll versus Sami Callihan in a no-rules deck fight. Slaughter on the water, baby. We also got LAX versus the Young Bucks. There's another dream match right there. Four Corner Survival Match, Kenny King versus Frankie Kazarian versus Dalton Castle versus Jay Lethal, Cody
The NWA champion versus Delirious, a match requested and demanded by Cody himself. John Morrison is going to be there, a.k.a. Johnny Mundo will be on the ship. He wants to take on the whole Bullet Club. We know Brian Cage is going to get involved with that. We know the LAX is involved with that. Who is also going to be? Will Sami Callihan throw in his hat in the ring? Can we have another huge match being announced in just a few days? What do you think? I'm going to tell you right now. When we're ready, we're going to let you know. We also got a four-corner tag team survival match. The Dogs versus Young and so the Beer City Bruiser versus Lethal and Cheeseburger versus The Addiction. Everybody is on this cruise, man. Live Talk is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Live TIJ remembering Eddie Guerrero with Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr. Live Talk is Jericho with the entire Bullet Club. Live Talk is Jericho with Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Mick Foley doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show live just for you. Keeping it 100 versus Killing the Town. Don Callis and Paul Lazenby versus Conan and Disco and the Hurricane. Jerry the King Lawler and Jim Ross are doing their own live with JR and the King on the ship. And of course, the first round of the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament has been announced. Lethal versus Whitmer, Daniels versus Delirious, Skrull versus Titus, Young versus Gordon, that's bracket A. Bracket B is Briscoe versus Ferrara, Page versus Kazarian, Cheeseburger versus Beer City Bruiser, and Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King. So much more. Beyond the Darkness telling some scary tales. Cole Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing their unprofessional wrestling show. Busted Open Radio will be there with Dave LaGreca. Live comedy from Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Ron Funches, Sal and Q from Impractical Jokers, and of course the live music. Fozzy playing three sets, including one set that's all cover songs with a couple of extra little rarities thrown in there. Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour, they're currently out with Ozzy. He's going to be there. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project, Speewee, you've heard him and his music right here on Talk is Jericho, featuring Ribo on drums. Yeah, there you go. The Cherry Bombs, the darlings of rock and roll, are going to be there. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best AC/DC cover band, females. They're great. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Aussie cover band. Guest cruise director, SoCal Val. Guest host, Noelle Foley. Brandi Rhodes is going to be there. Kelly Klein, Sumi Sakai, Mandy Leon. Everyone is going on this damn thing. So book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com and come join the fun, all right? And speaking of fun, coming up on Friday, Asking Alexandria is going to be here. Alone in a Room is tearing up the Sirius Octane Biggins chart. It's number one for 4 weeks. They just released a brand new video for the single, and their tour starts this Friday, September 21st, in South Carolina. So come hang with Asking Alexandria on Talk is Jericho this Friday. Danny Warstop and Ben Bruce, they are a trip. They're great guys. It's going to be a fun show. Until then, in the meantime, in the between time, stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
The Westwood One Podcast Network.